I think I was slightly lukewarm on it the first time I saw it, but the more I've watched it, I think it's one of my favourites. I love it.
It wasn't the same hit that Pulp Fiction had for me, but I think it does, yeah, it does kind of age really well.
It's a great adaptation. Absolutely love the soundtrack.
Pam Grier is fantastic. I think she's just phenomenal. I think Robert Forster is phenomenal. It also feels like the other characters are fully formed in a way that maybe they're not in something like Pulp Fiction. I say this, Pulp Fiction at one point was my favourite film of all time. Like, I adored it as a teenager, and I would gladly go off and watch it again. But there's something here about the three-dimensionality of everyone that I really like.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of FlixWatch Podcast. Today I'm joined by Will.
Hi there.
Russ.
Hi.
Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Jackie Brown.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us today, we have Russ and Will. Over to you, Will, to say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi there, I'm Will. I'm an occasional contributor to other podcasts. I've been on Russell's a few times. We've just recently done a mini-series of the Jurassic Park Connections, which was connected to Jurassic Park quite loosely in some cases.
Yeah, I was looking through it. It didn't quite make sense at a first look as to some of the connections with the Jurassic Park. Give us one of the more tenuous ones and why.
A very tenuous one was Exorcist 3, because Samuel Jackson, L. Jackson, briefly appeared in a dream sequence. So to say it was tenuous was, yeah.
Sure.
But it was a chance to talk about Exorcist 3, so.
Everyone needs that in their life. Russ, who are you?
So I'm Russ. I am the host and showrunner of a podcast called Not Just for Kids, which is mostly a podcast about family films and the films I grew up with. But I do sometimes go out on tangents that are nowhere near connected to that. But for the most part, I talk about family films. I talk about the 90s. I talk about musicals. I talk about Studio Ghibli. And right now I'm talking about modern animations, the last 20 years of animation and how wild it's got in the last like 5 or 6 years with some amazing films.
I love the way you call yourself a host and showrunner. Like you're...
they're the same thing.
But I was listening to I looked for films that we'd both done on here and on and your show, and one was the How to Train Your Dragon, which then went into the How to Train Your Dragon series, and that's generally one of my favourite film series in the entire world. And we had How to Train Your Dragon on here, which is a pleasure. So tell us about the kind of the family films side of things. Why is that important to you, and why do you think it's a key?
So I am a father, so I have two kids, and I kind of over the last 6 years I have watched mostly family films. Like, I do watch some other stuff, but I do watch a lot of family films. And so I had this idea a couple of years ago to look at them, because I don't think there's a podcast that... it doesn't get the same kind of attention as other genres. And I think it's important to kind of understand the films we've watched and where we come from with those and the films that kind of shape us. So, like, I am obsessed with Jurassic Park because I saw it when I was, like, 4 or 5, and it terrified me.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't get through it. I saw it in the cinema with my dad, and I was too young.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get through it. He took me out after the second T-Rex scene, but I became obsessed with it. So it's this, that kind of was the idea. And I think a lot of people who love films and other subjects started a podcast during the first lockdown. And I thought it'd be one series and I'd be done. I had this idea to look at a certain 10 years of animation in the West. I thought it'd be done, but I kind of love it. I kind of love just talking to people. So I get a guest on every episode. Some are like, I have like semi-regular guests like Will and a few others, but there's also like, I get on other podcasters, I get directors, get on actors, stuff like that. Just people I think are interesting, I get on to talk about films Because, yeah, I'm fascinated with what people think about films. And so that's how I've ended up having this podcast that's now run for just over 2 years.
Well, we're here talking about your film, your choice, I should say, and that is Jackie Brown. Can you tell us, first of all, why did you choose Jackie Brown? And then I'll get the timer up and you've got a minute or less to give us the synopsis.
Yeah, so I wanted to pick a film that I probably wouldn't cover on my own podcast. So I kind of threw all the numerous family films that are on Netflix out of consideration. But Tarantino was this like director for me. We'll probably get into it, who I guess when I transitioned from a certain kind of film to more adult films, Tarantino is one of those directors that was instrumental in that. And Jackie Brown, I just had I have a huge love for it. I haven't watched it for years. So I thought we'd go for that one because, yeah, I love this film, as we'll get into. I hadn't watched it for about 10 years. So, yeah.
And your synopsis timer starts now.
Goodness. Right. So Jackie Brown is Quentin Tarantino's feature film follow-up to Pulp Fiction. He is adapting an Elmore Leonard novel, and it follows Pam Grier's eponymous air steward who works on the side for a violent gunrunner played by Tarantino regular Samuel L. Jackson. She helps this gunrunner transport his cash into the country free flights. She is busted by law enforcers and pushed to become an informer for them. And so she sets in motion a plan with the help of a smitten bail bondsman played by the wonderful Robert Forster that could bring her the cash needed to leave LA and find a better life elsewhere. All it requires is her to escape prosecution, outwit the police and Jackson's criminal, and make it through this her scheme without being killed in the process.
There you go. Well done.
I had written that beforehand.
Yeah, I could tell. How many people had seen... How many people had not seen this before? Everyone's seen this. Well,
yeah, I'd seen it.
There you go. That's the time.
I'd seen it before a couple of times.
Tarantino is, I think, our most repeat viewing director. There's an eloquent way of saying that, and that wasn't that. But he's the director we had most on this podcast. There you go. That's a better way of saying it. And the first Tarantino we had on was Pulp Fiction, and one of the guys that came in had never seen Pulp Fiction before. And I was both like enchanted by this fact. I was like so happy for him and also jealous at the same time that he was watching for the first time. I was just like, oh, because when you said about Tarantino being like a keystone director for you, because Pulp Fiction for me is like, oh shit, films can be like really like dialogue driven and be really cool at the same time. Whereas before, not necessarily, but there was a leaning towards like action films and things happening and people's heads getting cut off or whatever. But Pulp Fiction for me is like how much the dialogue can drive things. Anyway, so yeah, we've had Tarantino here quite a lot, and we're going to, whatever the score we get, Helen has prepared a Tarantino list, and we'll see where Jackie Brown ends up here. Will, so you said you have seen it before. What are your thoughts on Jackie Brown?
Yeah, I saw it in the cinema the first time. Oh, wow. I think I'm pretty sure it was the first film I ever saw on my own. I went on my own to see it.
Really?
Yeah, and because I was a big Tarantino fan, because I'm Tarantino, as Russell said, Reservoir Dogs was my first Tarantino film that I saw, and it was at the right age. I was probably a bit too young to watch it, but I watched it. And then, yeah, so eventually Jackie Brown was the first one I went to see in the cinema. I think I was slightly lukewarm on it the first time I saw it, but the more I've watched it, I think it's one of my favourites. I love it.
What about yourself, Hel?
So I can't remember. I definitely didn't see it at the cinema. And I remember watching it after Pulp Fiction, and I remember really, really, really loving the soundtrack, but not maybe being as like blown away from it. And then subsequent rewatches, I think I like it more and more. And the soundtrack alone is just, like, absolutely love the soundtrack. And the cast is so great, and some of the dialogue in there, like watching it again, I remember lots of it, and I just think it's a great adaptation, and you kind of wonder, like, why didn't he do more? Because I think it was a kind of like interesting sort of side to him with a bit more kind of straightforward storytelling that maybe we haven't really got from him. But so when you picked it, I was really looking forward to having a rewatch on this one.
I mean, you say straightforward, but there's still how the kind of the payoff at the end in the mall and the handover, that's quite an intricate setup there, isn't it? And we see it played from three angles at least, don't we? Jackie's, Robert Forster's, and do we see Robert De Niro's and Bridget Fonda's, are they separate in there as well? So we see it from four different angles. So that's quite, I think it's quite a complex bit of storytelling there to keep you engaged. And you see with each one, you know, how it expands and plays out. And I always forget that bit when I think about Jackie Brown. I always forget how that plays out at the end. And I think that's one of the things that each time I watch, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like super cool how it happens. And then I always forget that he kills Robert De Niro in it. And I'm like, fucking hell. Then I always forget that Samuel Jackson gets killed. I'm like, fucking hell. Maybe I just don't watch it enough. But I think it definitely does bear repeat viewing in my, and I think like everyone else here, with seeing Pulp Fiction, was like, fuck, this is like amazing. And it wasn't the same hit that Pulp Fiction had for me, but I think it does, yeah, it does kind of age really well.
I think the thing is with Pulp Fiction, it's such a blast that when watching Jackie Brown, I think that's probably why I was a bit lukewarm on it, because it wasn't that ultra-violent craziness of Pulp Fiction, which I went in possibly expecting to see because it's Tarantino. But I think, yeah, as watching it more and more, you realise it is one of his more linear films. Mm. But it's, yeah, like I say, it's vast. It's becoming one of my favourites because it is, although it's long, it is quite, it takes its time, but there's not a moment wasted, I don't think.
Yeah, I think there's a maturity to it that I think isn't in all of Tarantino's other work. Like, I think it's a much more mature piece. It is quite slow in its pace and it deliberately takes its time. And certainly when I was a teenager, Pulp Fiction felt like something dangerous, like something I shouldn't be watching. And then I watched Jackie Brown afterwards and it felt less, had less of that like taboo feel to it, because there's not that much shocking about Jackie Brown. There's no need for those kind of like moments in some Tarantinos which are there to shock, like the gimp in Pulp Fiction or the ear moment in Reservoir Dogs. But yeah, certainly Jackie Brown feels like there's some interesting stuff in it that it we can unpack on rewatching. You, and I think Pam Grier is fantastic. I think she's just phenomenal. I think Robert Forster is phenomenal. And while it's a superbly quotable script, it also feels like the other characters are fully formed in a way that maybe they're not in something like Pulp Fiction. I say this, Pulp Fiction at one point was my favourite film of all time. Like, I adored it as a teenager and I would gladly go off and watch it again. But there's something here about the three-dimensionality of everyone that I really like on this watch, that everyone on the screen feels fully formed and has their own agenda and motivations and brings something to it. It's I think that might be because it's based on a novel that it has that kind of quality to it, that it has it almost feels like a novel on screen, in that there's various plot strands and various threads, but it's all building this one moment, which is the bit of the mall.
What do you make of Robert De Niro's character? Because for me, I wasn't fully sure what he wants from hanging out with Samuel Jackson.
It's like a strange point in De Niro's career, because it's past the point where he was at his Oscar glory, but before he got to the like noughties onwards, where he kind of made some stuff that isn't as good. So this is kind of like his like transitional film. I think he's fun in it, but it's also, I think he's a bit, it's strange watching De Niro play a stoner, is basically what this is. It's like, I think De Niro is good, but I also think it's strange watching De Niro be a stoner. But it's great when he shoots, I forget the character's name, but when he shoots
Melanie
in the parking lot, that's a great moment.
Well, De Niro wanted Cherry. He wanted to play Max Cherry. And Quentin Tarantino had his heart set on Robert Forster. So he ended up in the role of Lou. And story goes that he didn't get that much direction and he was quite kind of frustrated with the role. And that's why I think we're kind of at the start of the film, Lou's very much kind of like looking around and he's kind of like a little bit pissed off to be there and doesn't quite know why he's there. And then he gets a bit more assertive and a bit more into playing his role as he goes along. So I think I came to this as a massive De Niro fan and just thought it was a really unusual role for him to be in. I think mainly because he was a little bit of a side character and also just was kind of like this real idiot, really. I mean, Lou's not very intelligent and he clearly has anger issues and he's just kind of like a bit of a bum. And I'm like, I'm used to De Niro being like the main guy and kind of like having the balls and stuff and putting things in motion. And here he's playing just kind of like, just like a nobody, really. He's been in jail. He's now out. He's just hanging around, smoking weed, being yelled at by Melanie. Can't remember where he parks his car. He's all sweaty, wearing bad clothes. Fun times.
That, when he kills Melanie, that was quite, that was like not as visceral as Tarantino is used to show him, but it's still like, holy fuck, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I know he's pissed off with her, but it's still, like I said, you know, a few minutes ago, I'm still surprised each time it happens. It's just not the way the tonality of the film's going up until that point.
Tarantino apparently toned down the violence after the reviews of, obviously, Reservoir Dogs, the ear scene, and Pulp Fiction being really violent. He decided that he was still going to have those moments, but have it off screen. So it's kind of like getting away with it.
And there are long stretches of this film where there's no violence at all, where it's really mostly at the beginning and the end that we get the violence. The rest of the time, it's not that violent a film. It's more about almost downtime with these people. A lot of it is like just downtime with these people. And I can see why that... So I can see why I got a slightly less warm response from critics at the time, because there's...
They're expecting the Pulp Fiction Pulp Fiction's like,
got the way the narrative is constructed makes it exciting even when they're just having conversations, because it's out of order. But this is like, it feels confident of Tarantino to just have moments, long stretches where not much is really happening.
Who was it that said they like Tarantino to have made more adaptations? Was it you, Helen?
Yeah, just because I feel as though, just me personally, that I haven't really enjoyed his later films as much as his earlier ones. And maybe I personally think that his ego has been left to run away with himself and become too overindulgent over kind of like small ideas that he's made like 3-hour films out of, whereas he could do with a little bit of like structure and like the basis of a good story. That's my personal opinion. Like, I know other people think his later stuff is still the dog's bollocks, but I just feel that he's been kind of like left to run wild, and it's just become a bit of a pastiche of Tarantino in a way.
Well, just go on with it, Tarantino. Do what you want. Spend 3 hours riding around LA, essentially leveling a lot of it at Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And also, because I still haven't seen it, I haven't seen it Hateful Eight, because I just thought the runtime just seems oppressive and I can't be asked.
It's very long. I had fun with Hateful Eight, but yeah, I have less interest in Tarantino when he's having a conversation of American history and past and cinema. And this is fascinating to me because it's a conversation he's having by adapting another creative's work. And is fascinating here to have that the rest of the time it's kind of his own ideas kind of percolating away, and they go off and, you know, he kills Hitler on screen, which is entertaining, but also... I think that there's the maturity here is what I miss a lot of the time. Like, even Once Upon a Time doesn't have that, even though it is quite long.
I just really love it when they're record shopping. More record shopping, maybe.
This is definitely his most restrained film.
Yeah.
And it helps that he's not in it, because that's his, when his ego goes, like, when he appears it, he's always terrible. But this is just someone letting him do his thing, whereas Jackie Brown, possibly because it's, like you say, it's a book previously, that it's more restrained. But yeah, I still love his stuff in the most part. But yeah, you could do with someone just saying, come on, quit it, mate.
Wind it in a bit.
You don't have to be in it.
You say he's not, you say he's not in it, but his voice is in it. He's the voice of the answer machine, so he's in it slightly.
Oh, is he?
And also, while we're talking about people who are in it, did anyone else spot the alleged Danny DeVito cameo at the start? It looks like him from the back, but when she's walking
where
through the...
Is this in the airport?
Really?
At the very start, if you watch it again, the back, because I was like watching it going, that really looks like Danny DeVito. And trivia would point that it is. Apparently they're like friends and stuff. So you can okay. check back because it's at the start and see whether you think it is. But the cast is great. We've mentioned, obviously, Samuel Jackson's in it. And there's, I think, even though it's a really, really small role, Beaumont is such a memorable role. Paul Beaumont. Yeah.
Chris Tucker.
Obviously, Bridget Fonda as well.
Well, just talk about, Samuel Jackson is Quentin Tarantino's kind of go-to guy, isn't he? So when Adele's kind of is a really kind of scheming, but thinks he's super streetwise, but at the same time, not really. And how he, when he tried to swindle Robert Forster's Bells Bondsman, and he was just like, yeah, I'm just telling you what I've got to do. You, if you want this to happen, if you want to get Jackie Brown out, you have to pay the money. There's no way you're going to get around it. And it's just like, oh, fuck it. Let's go on with it. He's like low key conniving. And, you know, the way he dispatches Adele, sorry, the way he dispatches Beaumont in a way he would have clearly dispatched of Jackie Brown had she not been, you know, 10 times as conniving, is really interesting. And I think that's the thing I kind of take away is that I still haven't kind of worked out how she's worked out the plan and made it work. And I think that's a really special part about the film is that she's unfortunately kind of found herself in this dead end job, but she seems to be, you know, head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of street smarts and intelligence and just sass as well. And you can see why Robert Forster's like made up with her when the first moment he sees her.
Yeah. I think Jackson's great here. I think it's really an interesting performance given that, again, this comes so soon after his turn in Pulp Fiction. This is a much less cinematically cool figure, but there is that complexity to him and he's kind of monstrous from fairly early on. And yeah, he's very compelling in this. I think he's great in this. And I love Robert Forster. I think Robert Forster is wonderful in this. I think it's a really endearing aspect of this. There is this kind of romance bubbling away within this film that kind of isn't there in other Tarantinos for me, that it doesn't have. I think this is why I might like it so much, is because it feels his most human, that there's these human interactions going on within it that are kind of absent in other works.
It's almost like this one doesn't almost exist in Tarantino world, if you know what I mean, because Tarantino's is quite, his world is quite cartoonish. The violence is always cartoonish and it's still horrible, but it's ultra violence. And whereas Jackie Brown feels almost, like you say, more human, more grounded. It's definitely not in Tarantino land. It seems like it's
what a fun theme park that would be.
No, yeah, not one for the kids, but yeah. But yeah, it just feels like you say a more human, restrained film. Where, and that might have something to do with him again not being in it as such. But yeah, it's definitely.
You really take against Tarantino's
yeah,
face.
Yeah, I mean, when he's in things, especially when he's got an Australian accent for no apparent reason.
He's pretty bad in Django Unchained. But, yeah,
so bad. But yeah, it's his most tender. Probably not the right word, but it's his. He's his most human film.
There's one other person, Michael Keaton. There's like the period of time where he just kind of pops up, and obviously he reprised his role, or did he do it before? I can't remember. Ray Liotta in Out of Sight.
Yeah, which is also a film we've recorded here, guys. Yeah, it was really cool. I love Keaton. I think he's amazing. And Dope Sick was, you know, a recent TV series he was in. He stole the show. And yeah, absolutely. Every time it comes on, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
He also has a great costume for a member. I remember the costume's been quite great in this. Like Keaton's wearing, I think, a cool jacket at one point. But yeah, Keaton is very cool here. And they all have this kind of low-key coolness to them. They all have that kind of Tarantino coolness that's just... It almost oozes from the screen. It's great. But yeah, I love Keaton in this.
But again, outwitted by Jackie Brown at every step.
Everyone is. Everyone is outwitted by Jackie Brown by the end. It's wonderful to watch.
I think we should mention the soundtrack is an absolute banger as well.
Yeah.
Such a good soundtrack.
I haven't listened to the soundtrack. I don't know why. And that's something that needs to be rectified straight away on Spotify.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it happens each time, I'm like, oh, Delphonics, this is a tune.
And that moment with the tracking shot of her across 110th Street is one of my favorite Tarantino shots. Just
iconic, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then you don't see Jackie Brown. You don't actually hear her speak for like half an hour. She's not in the film for quite a while before she actually makes the first, before she first speaks, which is quite interesting as well for the main character, for the title character of the whole film. Okay, let's head to the scores.
Hello, I'm Hannah Flint from the First Film Club. a film podcast series dedicated to established and emerging talent, both in front of and behind the camera, and the feature debuts that launched their careers. From the new drama Mass to the cult classic Heathers, each episode is dedicated to a film, a guest, and the behind-the-scenes stories, memories, and advice from their time on set. Find us, the First Film Club, wherever you listen to your Stripped Media podcasts. Come join the club.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of the scores are out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Russ, with your recommendability.
I would give this a 4.5 because... anyway, people who recommend this to now, I think, are mature enough to watch this. I think as teenagers, we're not quite mature enough for this film, but now I think we are. And I think that it's, I just feel like this film is great. It's really entertaining and it's Tarantino at his most interesting. So go off and watch it. So might be 4.5 for that.
Will?
Yeah, I'd go along with a 4.4 because I think it's a Tarantino film. Even if you're not a fan of Tarantino's thing, you could recommend it and say, well, try this one because it's not as Tarantino as others. So yeah, I go along with a 4.
Helen?
I'm going to go a bit higher. I'm going to go 4.7. I think this is a Tarantino that you can recommend to people who say they maybe aren't a fan of Tarantino because it's not really like gimmicky. It's not as violent. It's still like quite sweary. But I think it's just like, it's got more like story and vibes going on. I just really love the kind of bits where they're just like listening to cassettes and he goes out and he buys like the little cassette because he's like heard it in her apartment. I just think those moments like that really make it. And like, I love the soundtrack and I just think it's really interesting De Niro performance as well. So yeah, 4.7.
I was really nostalgic for like record shopping when he bought that soundtrack. Like, I haven't done that for like years. Genuinely, I haven't gone to a record shop, and I used to spend all my money as a student on CDs, and I pined for that. Anyway, my score, I'm going for 4.2. I think not my favorite Tarantino, perhaps, though, as you guys have said, one that's easier to recommend to people. It's a 15. I think it's a bit longer than it needs to be, and that probably plays into the repeat viewing score more than anything. So 4.2. Russ, repeat viewing score.
I'm going to go for a 3.9 because whilst I now want to go off and watch it for the soundtrack, I haven't touched this film in maybe 10 years and I've gone to other Tarantinos before this and I have a less fondness for Kill Bill. I've watched Kill Bill more than this, so I don't watch this film that often and I'm not sure when I'm going to watch it again, but I'll be glad when I do go to it again. It's that kind of film, so I'll watch it again, but I'll probably go off and listen to the soundtrack on Spotify instead.
Yeah, I go with 3 because although I love it, there's other Tarantino films. If I was flicking through the telly and Pulp Fiction was on even halfway through, it's when I find myself I'd end up watching. Mm. Whereas I think Jackie Brown, maybe another 5 years, I think, oh, I could watch it again, but I wouldn't necessarily seek it out again if it's not my most watched Tarantino. So yeah, 3.
Helen?
Yeah, a 3.5. I really enjoyed this rewatch, but its length, 2 hours 34, makes it a hard one to just kind of think, yeah, I'm going to rewatch that one regularly.
So what was that, sorry? What was your score?
3.5.
Yeah, its length was a bit of a challenge this time, and just because time-wise. And I think this is the first time I've done the thing where you can watch a film faster on Netflix. I was like... Should I try it? Went to 1.5 for like 2 minutes. I was like, no, I can't do this. It's dumb. But I thought it and I acted on it. So it shows there was something there that didn't need to, you know, I just felt the weight of the time on me. I will watch it again. I think it's important watching, not so frequently, not so often, but I think I'll save it each time I do. So 4. Small screen score, Russ.
I'm going to be quite high because I've only ever seen this on the small screen. I've never seen it in cinema. So I'm going to 4.8. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it feels like you're watching a couple of episodes of a TV show. Like it has that kind of pace and feel of some TV. It'd be really good TV if it was like this. So I think it's like perfect for the small screen. It's has some cinematic moments like that tracking shot early on, but unlike other Tarantinos. What about
the close up of Bridget Fonda's feet?
Yeah. Yeah. Always the feet. Yeah, so I think this is perfect for the small screen, so it's 4.8 for me for this.
Will?
Yeah, 4.5, because I think it's, like, as Russell said, they are the showy cinematic moments, like the Chris Tucker moment. That shot is great, and as you say, that tracking shot. But as you said, it looks like it could be a TV series now with cinematic TV. But yeah, I go 4.5. Although I did see it on the big screen, I don't think it makes much difference.
So I always found that Chris Tucker, like, death scene so cheeky, because the way he kind of cons him into getting in the car in the first place, and then he just drives, like, not even round the corner. I don't know what he'd call that, how far he drives to then kill him. such a dark, funny, like, sequence. But then it does look really cool, the way the crane shot just, like, lifts up above the fence, and that's where he caps him. Helen?
So this actually had a... came back to the cinemas probably about like a month ago, or maybe a bit less, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, really?
And I just couldn't get to the cinema.
There's a lot of films coming back to the cinema recently, aren't they?
Well, Pam Grier came to the Ritzy Cinema and did a Q&A. And yeah, the date, I just couldn't make the date, unfortunately. So I think if I'd have gone to the cinema, that would have been like the time to go and see it. So I'm probably not going to go and see it. And I've only ever seen it on the small screen. So I'm going to say 5.
I think the soundtrack makes it not quite a 5, but otherwise I think it's great. I don't think it's got the moments weighed, A, cinematically, and B, in terms of like crowd experience, collective experience that you'd want to experience with other people. I'd love to watch Pulp Fiction with other people. I think that'd be absolutely amazing to do so, the Prince Charles, something like that. But for this, I don't think so. So yeah, 4.8 as well. Engagement score. Russ?
I'm going to go with a 3 because I did watch some 2 halves, so that I did find it quite easy to pause this and come back to it a couple of days afterwards. And I, as much as I'd love that it's got that kind of pace to it, that it is slow, I think you could easily do this in a couple of chunks. And I don't think I need to watch it all in one sitting, so it is just a 3 for this.
There's that bit of The Irishman, there was like, shortly after The Irishman came out, a few people posted how you can watch it in smaller chunks, didn't they?
Yeah.
And like make it like a miniseries rather than just make it a film. I don't think that's necessarily the case with this, but it's you know, it's good to know the films where you can just stop, yeah, come back to it later on. Will?
Yeah, I'd go with a 3 because it is so, it's quite languidly paced. It takes its time. So I'd go with a 3.
Helen?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say like this film is probably like 70% story and 30% vibes. Like the bit that are just vibes, you can just like, yeah, that's kind of cool. But then you do have to pay attention at the end, and you do have to listen out to like who's going to carry what bag and who's telling what. And when the film does the different viewpoints, you have to be paying attention, because otherwise you'll be like completely lost. So I'm going to give it a 4. I was pretty much engaged, but I did do a little bit of IMDBing on the trivia just because I kind of had seen it a little bit before.
I'm going to go for a 4 as well. And I think you do have to pay attention in sections. I think there are moments where you can come almost like close your eyes and just let the dialogue wash over you. But when, you know, she's setting up the heist and also this, you know, the scene in the mall, I think from then on you need to be like on it, because it really does kick up a few notches. And that gives us an overall score of 4.03750. Okay, so as we said before, we've had a few Tarantino films in the pod for Flix Watcher. Helen, you got the list there. Can you do us a rundown of the other films we've had and their scores, and let us know where Jackie Brown sits?
This is very, very exciting. So at the bottom of the table with 2.88, we've got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Not surprising.
It's too long, is it?
Oh, I just didn't like that film. Which you can listen back to all these episodes if you want to.
That is good plugging. Excellent.
Please do. And then we have Reservoir Dogs with 3.79. And then we're all quite close. So with 3.8... is Inglourious Basterds. 3.9 is Pulp Fiction. 3.96 is Kill Bill. So that means Jackie Brown is currently the leader. Whoop, whoop.
Mm. Interesting. And I was quite disappointed with Pulp Fiction's score when we recorded. And also what happens is...
Wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think... and also just the people in the room at the time. It's dependent on the people in the room. So, guys, we did... Us two? What, for Pulp Fiction?
I think we enjoyed it. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
We should listen to our own podcast, Helen, 5 years later on. So everyone who's listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And of course, as well as talking about the films and stuff on Netflix in general, we do put a shout out before we go to record. Ask for your opinion. Look out for a tweet that says something similar to this. We're reviewing Jackie Brown with at Russ Loves Movies and at Will Chich. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and you score out 5 stars with an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. And we had a few responses. Russ asks, this is your film. Do you want to take us out with the first response?
Cool. There's one from when one thing leads to another. He said, rewatched this a couple of weeks ago, was interested if it still holds up. I remember enjoying it first time round, and I think it does. Great performances all round. Maybe could have truncated the ending a touch. 4 out of 5.
I think truncated the start and the middle. Anyway. I think the ending was fine. I thought the ending was good. Will, you want to read out a tweet?
I did have them, but then I realised I haven't got them anymore because I had to change to Chrome when I messed up. So they've gone down. I'll just see if I get them now.
Helen?
So I will take one from a recent guest of the show, Kevin Lahane. First, he went with a gem. Once prompted, he came back with 5 stars. In a gift form, so I had to watch the stars come up.
You see, guys, if you want to send us a message, can just be a two-word response, a gem like that. Well, a gem, 5 stars.
Don't forget the stars, because we get very annoyed without the stars.
Russ, you want to say the last one?
I have one from Scheitgeist Pod, which says Peak Tarantino doesn't get nearly the love it deserves, and he's given it 5 stars, but the stars are bundles of cash. So I think it's an emoji that links into Tarantino. Yeah. Likes it a lot.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you very much for joining us. Can you just sign off very quickly by telling us where we can find you online in the Twitter, Instagram, pod world? And we'll say goodbye to everyone who's listening.
You can find me at Will Chich on Twitter. That's mainly. I do Instagram at Bill Chich, but I'm not very good at it. So Twitter mainly.
Yeah, and Twitter is where you'll find me at Russ Loves Movies. That's where I post any kind of writing or podcast appearance I do. My podcast can be found in the same feed that you're finding this. Just go off and search for Not Just For Kids and subscribe and search for a film that you like, and you'll probably find a gem of an episode.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for coming on. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.